This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands and Chile, directed for New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the program. The BBC, like many other public broadcasters around the world, have to go through government paper to find out how money is being spent and also to look at the future. Well, one of the public broadcasters that actually is going through that is the BBC. The current structure has over 18,000 staff, 9 TV channels, 10 national radio stations, and a very large online presence. But is it sustainable? Charlie Beckett from the London School of Economics unpacks some of the recommendations. He speaks next to Richard Ady.
It is, and it's going to be painful, but not yet. The cuts don't actually kick in until about 2019. And there are other compensating factors. So, for example, the BBC licence fee will continue to rise with inflation, which in a world where everybody is having to make cutbacks here in Britain in public services, in some ways, that's not such a bad deal. But it does mean they're going to have to make very painful decisions. And unfortunately, if you like, Tony Hall didn't say what those painful decisions were going to be yet.
Well, let's deal with the license fee. I was going to put it aside, but you've mentioned it, so let's deal with it. Is it going to continue over the next 10 years after charter renewal? And if it isn't, what's it going to be replaced with?
Well, this is still perhaps the decisive issue, not because it will mean cutbacks if they change the way that the money is raised for the BBC, but that it will have consequences about how the BBC operates in the future. So, for example, if it went to subscription, then the BBC would be much more subject to market forces. But the current sort of favourite compromise is a move towards a household levy, which is pretty much what they've got in Germany, where you pay the licence fee or tax or levy per household, so it's irrelevant of what kind of devices you've got. And that's a way of trying to cope with the idea that increasingly people aren't watching television on a TV set or listening to radio on a radio set. So instead of having a license fee for devices, you should have it for households.
So Tony Hall was very coy about axing services, but it seems clear that some will have to go. Do we have any idea about where those cuts might be made?
Well, there was sort of a hint. What he was setting out in his speech at the Science Museum, in a way, was a kind of bold vision. So there was this idea of having BBC Ideas, which would be a wonderful amalgam of cultural and scientific programming content made in collaboration with lots of museums and perhaps universities and theatres. And it sounded wonderful. It's going to be a wonderful online service pulling stuff together. And then you think, well, actually, could this be a replacement for one of the BBC's sort of secondary channels, which is BBC Four, which is sort of a somewhat high-minded, highbrow cultural TV channel. So they may dump that to help pay for this new online idea. So you're getting hints there. They also talked, for example, about a sort of iKids, BBC iKids, an online children's service. Well, could that be a good excuse to drop the conventional children's programming?
Charlie, you're a newsman. That's journalism's where you're from. It seems pretty clear from what Lord Hall was saying and also in the document that came out in conjunction that the days of rolling news are probably numbered.
Probably. I mean, the idea of having a big channel, a rolling news channel with a big studio, lots of cameras and crews and so on, with a tiny audience, frankly, looks increasingly redundant when most people get their live, not most people, but increasingly people will get their live and breaking and continuous news from the internet. And it makes sense, I think, for the BBC to be much more present in social networks and on its own social media platforms and devices than to keep going with this big TV studio. But one of the problems with the BBC is that that will only save about 70 million quid. And you said if the gap is around 700 million, then that doesn't get you very far. So these are some of the least they have to do.
Tony Hall also was talking about investing in journalism, though. So stronger offerings for North Korea and Africa, India, Russia, the Middle East. I suppose that world service end of the BBC.
Indeed, and I think he's being politically astute here, and I think he is addressing a real concern out there in the world that with the rise of stations like Russia Today and the Chinese and the Turks have just launched their own global TV channels, there is a sense that Western liberal countries like the BBC ought to be putting their voice in the sort of global public sphere. And so I think it's politically astute because it's something that will get them support, frankly, from the government, being seen to put a voice for that kind of liberal perspective in the world. There's a similar move locally where Tony Hall has suggested creating a pool of local reporters who would supplement local news coverage in the UK to the benefit even of local newspapers. But of course there's all sorts of problems with that. If you create this local pool of reporters, won't that just mean that newspapers will sack a few of their own guys?
If we move away from journalism, Charlie, there's also two ideas about aggregating content online. They're both pretty ambitious, and both, I think, Lord Hall has casted in the way of trying to compete with Netflix and Amazon.
Yes, the iPlayer is, in a sense, it's the successor to what could have been a great opportunity. A few years ago, the BBC was part of a partnership with other broadcasters to create one online player where you could access all this material. Unfortunately, that deal fell apart, and the BBC iPlayer was left putting out BBC content, and not always all the BBC content, so you couldn't gorge yourself on a whole series, for example. And increasingly, the BBC is having to compete, as you say, with people like Netflix, with the box set, if you like, online. And so they're hoping that both by strengthening their own presence, but also by encouraging other people to come on to iPlayer, that they can build that brand. I just don't understand how it's going to work, though. I don't see why commercial broadcasters who already have their own on-demand players would give their content to the BBC and so lose out on revenue.
Well, there's actually two ideas, as I understand. One is to open up the iPlayer and get the likes of ITV and Channel 4 and others to put their content on it. But the other is to go back to the original idea that you mentioned before, Charlie, of creating a cross-industry online video platform, something that's already been tried once and hasn't worked.
And I think that the commercial logic may not work now. In a sense, that horse has already bolted. There's certainly a big threat, if you like, to the British media market and to content producers here from very well-funded, mainly American media companies. And if we want to keep our end up with British cultural production, then we do have to look to institutions like the BBC to try and provide more infrastructure, partly on platforms where people can access content, partly by opening up its own revenue and resources. So it may be that it's more about the BBC's studios, the BBC's resources being much more accessible to other independent producers and even their rivals.
One thing we haven't talked about is that the BBC spends about £870 million a year on salaries. That's not counting the stars, actually. And employs about 18,000 people. How much is that likely to change?
Well, again, one of the problems that the BBC has faced over the last few years is that the more it tries to cut back on management levels, the more they seem to spring back. So Tony Hall very proudly announced the other day that he had managed to cut back the number of layers of management at the BBC from 10 to 7. Well, most organisations would find to have 7 levels of management to be quite appalling. And the overall headcount of the BBC has not really diminished much in the last 12 months. And that's because in the end, there's only so much you can do by salami slicing. The BBC has to decide what its priorities are. It has to decide there are certain things it's not going to do. And I think the BBC, for example, may have to accept that it can't show football anymore. It spends quite a big lump of its programme budget on showing Premier League highlights. It doesn't have any live games anymore, but it spends a lot of money on the highlights. Perhaps it has to just swallow hard and accept that football is just too expensive for a public service broadcaster.
Charlie, we've been talking about the first of what the BBC is itself calling key moments in response to charter renewal. So the second, as we've already mentioned, comes later this week. Very early Friday morning, Australian time, Tony Hall speaks to the Royal Television Society Conference in Cambridge, and he is expected to talk about the future of BBC Studios, which is still being set up but will contain drama and entertainment and comedy and factual TV programme making. What is likely to happen there?
Well, it's astute of you to notice that, because it's a sort of clunky nuts and bolts issue rather than the sexy issues about which channels get cut. People haven't really noticed this. This is quite a big kind of internal, I wouldn't say privatisation, but it makes the BBC's studios much more accountable. They're going to have to be much more open to collaboration elsewhere, in other words, selling their services. And that's going to be quite painful for a lot of BBC employees. There are going to be fewer people working around the studios, and they're going to have to be much more responsive to the business they can generate. And I think, in a sense, that's the kind of infrastructure change and the challenge that they're going to have to take on board if they're going to make the BBC leaner and fitter. And at the moment, the BBC is still too bloated, frankly.
There's a lot at stake here, Charlie. When we get to the end of charter renewal, which is still 15 months away or so, how do you think the future of the BBC will look?
Well, if you talk to some of the more passionate pro-BBC types, and there's a lot of them, they've been saying, I would say crying wolf, they've been saying that this is inevitable decline, the BBC won't exist in 10 years. I think that's rubbish, frankly. This is an organisation that needs to adapt and change, not just because of austerity economics, not just either because of the digital technological changes, although those will drive things a lot, but also because society changes. And the BBC was not like it is now before. It changed, it reformed in many radical ways over its long and illustrious history. So I think it must change again. And not tomorrow, perhaps not next week or next year. It should be shifting resources and, frankly, allowing other people often to do what it does now.
Charlie Beckett from the London School of Economics speaking to Richard Ady about the BBC Green Paper. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file. The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Let's move on now to a series of special broadcasts that PCJ Radio International will have targeted towards Europe and Southeast Asia in November and December. It's going to be once a week and is going to be outside our normal schedule and with programs outside of our normal program schedule. Actually, some special programs for these transmissions. The time will be from 9 to 10 hours UTC. That's 9 to 10 hours UTC. The frequency is 17825 kilohertz. That's 17825 kilohertz. Some of the programs you'll be able to hear are the following. November the 14th, Say It With Music. November the 21st, Call It Ukraine. November 28th, Rockin' With Raoul. On December the 5th, Classics with David Monson. December the 12th, a special edition of Jazz for the Asking. December the 19th, European Radio during World War II, and that's going to be a documentary. And then on December the 26th, a special program for the listeners that wrote in for those transmissions. Now, each of those dates will have a special QSL card that will be done electronically. And of course, if you don't know our email address for eQSLs, it's very simple. It's pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. One of the programs is of particular interest, and that's Classics with David Monson. David Monson, you may remember, hosted, or co-hosted, that is, one of our year-end specials a few years back. He passed away in Germany a few years ago. But before he did, actually, he recorded a series of classical programs for us, and we've actually never used them. So we're going to be airing one of them on December the 5th. It should be a lot of fun. Now, David Monson was a very special and unique character. He spent a number of years at the Foreign Service of Belgian Radio on a program called Brussels Calling. He was known for his interesting monologues where he would just talk about a particular subject, or he would be traveling throughout Belgium with a mobile unit and describing the scenes around him. Eventually, many of those monologues were released as an LP. We're going to listen to one of the more interesting ones right now to refresh your memory.
It's amazing, you know, what I can see from my window, from our studio window. I'd feel rather like Bartleby in Herman Melville's short story. You remember him staring out at a blank wall? Well, I'd feel rather like Bartleby if it wasn't for the fact that the wall on the opposite side of my studio happens to contain floor upon floor. There are 11 of them. 1911, yes. Floor upon directors on the 10th or 11th floor, not quite sure. Perhaps he spends his life gazing down in my window. Now, floor upon floor of those asymmetrical windows. Now, it's not the asymmetry of the windows that interests me. It's the goings-on behind the windows that does, and I'm not sure sometimes whether the occupants of the offices they give light to realize that somewhere on the opposite side of the building the eyes of a voyeur are at work, a peeping Tom at his dirty work. This could also end up sounding like the first chapter of a novel by a French existentialist. Ever heard of Babus? I was always fascinated by that first chapter of L'Enfer, that's what it is, right? Hell, where the principal character is found almost on the first page, I think, peeping through a hole in the wall, or was it a keyhole? And he was peeping through the hole at his neighbours in the hotel room next door. If you want to know what they were up to, well, read the book. What's so wrong with wanting to know what the neighbours are doing, anyhow? Everybody wants to know what I'm doing. I mean, my neighbours, that is, my street. I'm treading on dangerous ground now, but I'm almost sure that... Oh, would you believe it? There they go again. Barbus's hero. Almost sure that Barbus's hero, or anti-hero, would have found as much delight in his unnatural pastime by working for the radio station. This radio station. Now, this has left you all guessing, I suppose. I'm sure you'd give anything to find out what was actually going on right now in our studio. You can only hear my voice, and I'll vouchsafe for the fact that I'm proper enough, but you should see how the rest of them carry on here when I'm on the air. Sodom and Gomorrah had nothing on our studios. You can believe me if you wish. To get back to the window. And by the way, this is the first chapter of an existential novel I'm writing. Getting back to the windows, then, and what I can see in the windows opposite our studio. Right at this moment of time, what looks like a young blonde combing her long blonde hair, her one or two long blonde hairs. In a moment she'll be laying on the lipstick. Yes, that's exactly what I thought. Yes, a touch of rouge to the right and the left cheek, a dab of powder to the brow, quick squirt of whatever deodorant to below the right and left ear. She stands back to admire her handiwork, deodorant to the right or left, yeah, under her arm. She stands back to admire her handiwork. She gives herself a kiss in the mirror and gets lost once again in her handbag, no doubt searching for the nail polish. I wonder what director. She's going out with tonight.
David Monson, formerly of Brussels Calling from Belgium. And we're going to be presenting one of the special classical programs that he recorded from us a number of years ago. So do tune in. And by the way, the special that we have on European radio during World War II is an interesting one. It's a documentary from Jonathan Marks, who hosted Media Network on Radio Nederland for many years. Anyway, that's the information. Again, the time from 9 to 10 hours UTC on the following dates, November 14th, 21st, 28th, December 5th, 12th, 19th, and 26th. And the frequency for that is 17825 kilohertz. That's 17825 kilohertz. And of course, the email address to send your EQSLs, reception reports to receive the EQSL is very simple. It's PCJQSL at PCJMedia.com. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland. If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 idents and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the DXR.ca internet website. That's DXER.ca. Good listening, everyone.
Well, for the past while, the shortwave bands actually have been doing quite well. They've opened up, and a lot of stations that maybe you haven't had a chance to listen to before are coming in for the very first time, or better than they normally would. Well, to find out what's happening propagation-wise and what we can expect over the next 7 days, here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through October 31st, normal at low and middle latitude bands, normal to fair at high latitudes. From space weather in South Africa through October 31st, magnetic conditions unsettled, becoming active on the 31st. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, the four-day forecast through November 2nd. Solar activity low, a chance of M-class flares and R1 or R2 radio blackouts, increasing from 10 to a 25% risk from an unstable-looking sunspot. From FK Yanda in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on October 30th and 31st, November 1st, 3rd, 8th, 10th, and 17th. Active to disturb November 2nd, 4th, and 9th. Mostly quiet on November 5th, 6th, 11th, 12th, and 15th. Quiet to unsettle November 7th, 13th, 14th, and 16th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field reaching G2 moderate storm levels November 3rd and 4th, with G1 minor storm levels expected November 5th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 14th. Active field conditions expected November 6th, 7th, 13th, and 17th, and then quiet to unsettled. ANK indices peaking at 50 and 6 on November 3rd, 40 and 6 on the 4th, 25 and 5 on the 5th, another peak of 25 and 5 on November 9th. The only quiet dates of 5 and 2 are November 2nd, 15th, and 18th to 21st. Bill Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave DX maps show strong to extreme tropospheric ducting along the Texas Gulf Coast, extreme off Southern California, with a possible connection almost to Hawaii around November 2nd.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. Before we go, I just want to tell you that the information that I gave out earlier about those special transmissions that we have to Europe and Southeast Asia, you can find the information at our website. It's on the homepage at www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. If you wish to let us know what you think of the program or have any story ideas or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. Thanks to ABCRN. So until next time, 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Yeah.